All material opulences. Api, although. Na, not. Muyanti, is bewildered. Translation. Bali Maharaj has become the most famous among the demons and non-believers, for in spite of being bereft of all material opulences, he is fixed in his devotional service. Repeating, Bali Maharaj has become the most famous among the demons and non-believers, for in spite of being bereft of all material opulences, he is fixed in his devotional service. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. In this verse, the words siddhan, api, na muyati are very important. A devotee is sometimes put into adversity while executing devotional service. In adversity, everyone laments and becomes aggrieved, but by the grace of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, a devotee, even in the worst condition, can understand that he is going through a severe examination by the Personality of Godhead. Bali Maharaj passed all such examinations, as explained in the following verses. Om Agyanati Marandasya Gananjana Shakaya Chaksura Militam Yena Tashmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So it seems that these descriptions of Bali Maharaj's surrender and the different aspects of his overcoming all false ego, considering his body to be his own, etc. All of these different almost riddles that Krishna posed to him in a very active form, not to answer the question from a third-party position, but actually being in the position himself and being questioned, and what do you do? What do I do with my third step? Bali surpassed all the tests because he simply and humbly wanted to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna. We can take so many lessons from these verses. One is that if we want to please Krishna as devotees, we simply have to become strong in that desire. So many different aspects of life are there, so many different ways to surrender, so many different issues come to us in the form of maybe bad health or poverty or mental disorders. So many issues are there that come to us prevent us from discharging devotional service. So many excuses can be found also to prevent one from discharging devotional service. And even some of these adversities and trials lead people, they often lead people to disparage of devotional service altogether and leave the process of Vaidhi Bhakti and serving the Supreme Lord. So this is a sad thing. Bali Maharaj, however, is this great exception for us. He demonstrates that it's not necessary for one to leave when adversity strikes. Moreover, he demonstrates that it's important, essential, to take shelter of the Supreme Lord when adversity strikes. That is the time when our relationship with Krishna becomes the most wonderful. It becomes actually the most valuable to us when adversity strikes. A devotee is not without feeling that when some difficulty arrives, perhaps to family members or friends. He's not without feeling, but still he understands the constant principle that's affecting this material existence, his material existence, and all those that he sees in the material world. He understands the constant situation of karmic reactions, in the devotee's case sometimes reactions for offenses. He appreciates that this is going on, and that even pure devotees, as we've seen Prabhupada, he suffered a great deal in his last years, and even within the course of all the times that he spent with us and coming to us, having heart attacks and so forth, having different health issues, but constantly carrying on his determination to serve Krishna. So we learn from this absolute platform, pure devotees, fixed in devotional service, and we follow so that when adversity strikes, we take shelter of Krishna. And the more that happens, the more we take shelter, the more we practice taking that shelter, the more we become not just sheltered and protected, comfortable, even in adversity, but the more we become enlightened, understanding how great Krishna is, how great Krishna has arranged our lives with so many different difficulties and problems, each one of us having our individual, as Christians say, cross to bear, with so many different problems that are just perfect for us in terms of ultimately coming to a surrendered position. It seems so many times we get the same lesson over and over again, same lesson is repeated in our life. And that is, of course, the lesson we need to learn. Yeah, that's the thing we have to really concentrate on. It may be that we're struggling with poverty, or maybe we're struggling with health, or maybe we're struggling with, as I said, mental disorders, which is a kind of health problem. So someone may have all these different difficulties, but by taking shelter of Krishna and practicing this idea that Krishna can alleviate all of my anxieties, all of my problems, and what's more, I can actually participate in his loving service. I can actually serve Krishna, despite all my shortcomings. We all have so many shortcomings. Nobody is proficient in every area. Only Radharani has all the different things covered, all the bases covered. She's an expert carpenter. I remember that always struck me as wonderful. And here's a woman being a carpenter. Of course, we have our Akuti, who's like that. She's an expert carpenter. And so it's very exciting when we think about a perfected being. Of course, she's not perfected. She was always perfect. Not that she had to go through any difficulties to achieve her position. But her position is an active one. We consider that Radharani is always involved in serving Krishna. It is not that she's achieved a status of queen of Vrindavan. Everyone just comes and bows at her feet and on reverence. No, she's actively engaged in activities all day long meant to satisfy Krishna. I was just thinking this morning as I was chanting these prayers, what a wonderful word the word gopi is. Such a nice sounding word. And it describes a person who takes care of cows, you know, a woman who takes care of cows. And so, how is that serving Krishna? Well, Krishna is very much favorable to the cows. He loves the cows. He's Govinda. He gives pleasure to the cows. And so, when someone is taking care of cows, they naturally become very dear to Lord Krishna. So this is a position. This is a service, an activity that in pure devotional service we attain that platform, not a status, but a platform, not a position. Like in India, so many people are interested in attaining a position, a government position, some job where they have security, they have, and then all they really have to do is drink tea all day and take little crackers. They don't do anything. It's amazing. You go to the offices sometimes and it's come back tomorrow. And they will go on like that as long as they can get you to leave the window and go away. They will come back tomorrow. So that status, that kind of status where one just takes advantage of a position, that is not desirable for a devotee. To take position, I'm guru, I'm sannyas, I'm elevated donor, I'm householder, I'm this, I'm that, I'm Brahmin. I remember when I first joined in Dallas, Prabhupada was lamenting the New York Brahmins. You know, they were Brahmins. They didn't do any sutra work. They wouldn't do anything practically. He was very upset with the mood that had developed around the idea of status in our society at that. And we're talking about the early 70s. So he was upset about this. And he used to sarcastically comment about it. And of course, this came down to us through our leaders, and we realized that becoming a Brahmin, spending about 6 months to get initiated, and a year later you can become a Brahmin. After 18 months, your service didn't stop when you hit a platform or a status. When you hit a status, it didn't stop. But that was the platform from which one could execute so many different services. So, in consideration of Bali Maharaj's torment, everything's being taken away from him, how does he come to that platform or that position of being satisfied with whatever the Lord meters out, whatever the Lord gives him? How does he come to that platform? Simply, he has taken shelter of the Supreme Lord. Simply, he's remembering the Lord on all occasions, and he's willing to offer everything to the Lord. This, sometimes, you know, what do we have? As, of course, the whole question was in many different versions, what do we have? We can't really say. It reminded me of an issue once. Kirtananda Swami had decided to challenge Prabhupada. And so, and this is one of the early meetings in one of in New York. So he came forward and he said, Swamiji, I give everything to Krishna. I give everything to Krishna. He was going to stump the Swami. He already told his friend, I'm going to stump the Swami. So he said that, and the Prabhupada said, well, what do you have? What do you have? So ultimately he was defeated. Immediately he realized, I have nothing. What can I offer? You know? We can't really say I have great intelligence and I can offer that, or I have this skill or that skill and I can offer that. I'm a great manager, I'm a great this, I'm a great that. It's not about what we have that we can offer to Krishna, and therefore we're doing such a nice job. I have money and whatever this thing. You know, it's not about that. We have an opportunity to surrender. And whatever facility Krishna has put at our disposal, our intelligence or our money or whatever, whatever kind of mood or whatever grace that Krishna has given us, our success is in offering that to Krishna, offering every bit of it, 100%, 100%, Prabhupada said, 100% pure, unalloyed devotional service. He used the example of metals. Alloys, sometimes you mix different alloys of gold and silver and so forth, because in the pure state the metal is too soft to actually be utilized, so they mix gold sometimes with some other metal that gives it a little strength or hardening. But pure gold, if you want pure gold, the valuable element in whatever gold filling you may have in your teeth or whatever kind of facilities that gold can be applied to, pure gold is the most valuable form. So becoming a pure devotee means you're unalloyed, you're not mixed with any other motivation, any other type of agenda. You have no second agenda in devotional service. Sometimes we used to comment about certain devotees in India, in Mayapur, and say, well, this is, for many people, this is a career move. You know? In other words, it's a very nice opportunity for village boys to come out of the village and live in a concrete house and have this facility, that facility, and so forth, and be access to collect a huge amount of money from different visitors and so forth. So that actually, you know, that was sometimes seen as a career move. And sometimes devotees would accumulate a great deal of money in this collection business, and then they'd build a very nice house in my own. So that was seen as somewhat alloyed. Although they were doing service, they were bringing people to Krishna by different means, preaching to them and showing them the holy places and then collecting a donation. And of course, whatever someone gives to Krishna, that's his permanent value. That's his permanent credit that he's giving something to Krishna. I was in Vermont several years ago, and one of my cousins was telling me about an aunt that I have there, my mother's sister, and I was, you know, just visiting practically to see what their situation was and talk with them. And they said, well, my mother, I got a call from the bank one day, and she was going to pull out $17,000 and send it to one of these evangelical preachers on the TV. She was going to send out her life savings. So a friend at the bank called me and said, this is going on. You might want to intervene. And so intervene. But I was thinking just the other day, actually, if someone does that, it may seem foolish. He gives it to someone who's going to put it onto his jet or his... you know, he needs a new jet, or he needs a second home in one of his other jurisdictions. He needs a tennis court, whatever. You may think, okay, this is a sad thing. But on the first end of it, the person who has volition to serve God in a certain way, even though that money may be diverted, wasted, still that person gets the benefit. They may have given something in ignorance to a certain extent, but the motivation to please God, to serve God, is there, and God recognizes that. Whatever misappropriation there may be after the initial gift, that's a different issue. That's actually a different issue. Many times people have that problem with our own society. Well, I gave this money, and it was supposed to be for the parking lot, and it wasn't used for the parking lot, it was used for something else. But they're not the loss. It's not their loss because they didn't get a parking lot. I mean, we don't essentially need a parking lot. What we need, though, is to surrender to Krishna. Of course, on the other hand, anyone who takes advantage of his position, anyone who takes a status position and takes advantage of that position and misuses the genuine offerings of those devotees, those would-be devotees, accountable. He's accountable for that. So our situation here with regard to the Bali Maharaj is he's dealing directly with the Supreme Lord. And there's no mistake. But still, there's a commentary, you know, did Krishna fool him? Was Krishna messing around with him in a sense? Was Krishna giving him a hard time too much? There's a question about that from some of the saints and sages who have made commentaries on this. So here it's explained that Krishna puts the devotee through some different examinations, and Bali Maharaj, he passed all such examinations. So our question is, will we pass the examination when the examination comes to us? Will we take full shelter of Krishna when we're asked for the final breath of life? What will we want at the time of death is really the question. Are we going to work very hard to sustain our body? Are we going to go through expensive operations and so forth? I was reading recently about something medical things. Sometimes people will take these operations and they go through intense pain to maintain and have these this chemotherapy and this, that, and the other. And the alternative, of course, is to live for maybe 4 or 5 more years and then die a very unpleasant death, but manageable death, and deteriorate rapidly over a period of 3 or 4 months, maybe just a few weeks. They'll go along almost normally until the balance is swayed in the end towards devastation of the body. So the question is, should they just go along like that and be more or less comfortable and then have a difficult demise, or should they go through years and years of this chemotherapy, being sick, throwing up, etc., going? So there's different levels of different diseases, and apparently if we discover them early enough, we get better treatments or better chances of survival. But ultimately the issue is, do we really want to go on and on and on and on with this body, especially in our later years when there's so much is going to be there. I know that my parents were very dependent on doctors, so the doctors kept them alive for many years, but the quality of their life was very, very, it wasn't exciting, it wasn't inspiring, it wasn't something that one would want to maintain. But if you don't have knowledge, if you don't have the knowledge of what comes after this life, you're in a real pickle. I spoke with a man, I went yesterday actually, Saturday, I went to this MegaCon convention in Orlando, and they had, it's a comic book convention, and Gopal, my actor, he was interested in this, and we thought maybe we'd meet some producers there. I knew one producer was going to be there, so I went there to meet these people, and Gopal went on Friday. I called him up on Friday morning, and or Saturday morning, and I said, "How's it going? What's happening?" He said, "Well, I'm in the hospital. He's had an appendicitis." I said, "Wow, you know, you're kidding me, you know?" No. So I said, "Oh my gosh, you know." Well, I was thinking about coming down there. I hadn't actually decided to do that. Then I woke up that morning and said, "I should go. I should try to do something, you know, and see if I can meet some people." So then I had to go, and so I got in touch with his mother, and we both went down, and he had an operation, and it was one of those things where they just make a small cut and they go in and got the appendicitis out and so forth. Amazing. So he was up and around the next, actually that evening, that Saturday evening, he was up and walking again. And so he, anyway, at the MegaCon, I met this man who had done all these biblical comic books, you know, and they were just, he had a very nice display. So I approached him and I started preaching to him, and I said, "You know, I'm making a movie about Krishna devotees and so forth. Would you be, you know, interested in producing that?" I could see the guy was really well dressed and really, you know, he was very confident. And I said, "No, I don't think so." So we discussed a little bit, and then he said, "You know, he lived in India for some time, and he knew about Buddhism and Hinduism and Islam. So forth. He knew a certain amount." And so I said, "Well, it's interesting." He said, "But you know, none of them have the transcendence of Jesus Christ, of the Christ offers." And I said, "Well, you have to forgive me, but you know, you're ignorant of that." I said, "Have you read the Bhagavad Gita?" And he said, "No." I said, "Well, then if you read the Bhagavad Gita, you would see there is real transcendence there in Krishna conscious philosophy." So I said, "You know, I'm sorry to have to say it, but your ignorance is that you haven't, you know, investigated this, and I can testify to you, just like Christians are always testifying, I can testify that this is actually a reality, that there is a transcendental orb or world that you can achieve, you know, through a means, not just, you know, through Lord Jesus Christ. And he's a bona fide way to get to heaven, but if you want total transcendence, you know." Of course, arguments like that kind of degenerate into my way or your way, but the idea was that we are ignorant of what Krishna is offering until we investigate what Krishna has said. And so many people have their scripture says this is the only way, and from that point they're stuck. They can't even look at anything else and investigate. And it's unfortunate. But we are pushing on despite a lack of what you might call a great popular movement, a great popular rush and demand for Krishna consciousness. We're pushing on this incredible philosophy and asking everyone to take shelter of Krishna and to try this chanting of the holy names. I told the man, I said, that the efficacy of transcendence is in the process of surrendering to God, and that process is embodied in the chanting. This chanting process actually brings you to that position of being in a surrendered situation, because it's a process. It's not just that I've been saved, boss. It's not finished. One has to actually take up a process that keeps him in touch with God at all times. So Bali Maharaj has this mood. He has actually taken that shelter, and he's ready to offer everything to Krishna. He does offer everything to Krishna, and he passes his examination. So our business is also to pass our examinations, whatever form they may take, by depending on Krishna and appreciating that these are Krishna's arrangements. You know, we all want to have that personal contact with Krishna. That's our ultimate goal, to go to the spiritual world and be in contact with Krishna on a regular daily basis, moment to moment practically. That's our desire. So this is the time when we practice cultivating that desire. And when things come along to move us away from that desire, to distract us from that desire, we go back to embracing that plan of action that Lord Chaitanya has given us, this constant chanting of Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Rama Hare Hare. Very, very valuable, the most valuable thing. So if we have really our minds fixed on this most valuable thing, all of the other material things, including our body and its health, and so all of these other things will take no real importance. They won't be concerned. We won't be concerned with them. We can try to alleviate unhealthy situations, but our objective always is to serve Krishna in any circumstance. That comes to mind, the devotee was Radhanath, who was in L.A. in a wheelchair. He was going out on Sankirtan. You know. It's totally amazing to see him in his total, complete frail position, going out and distributing books, coming to the temple. Just this is the pure surrender that we want to achieve somehow or another in our life. This is our goal and objective. And until we do that, we'll have some more tests to go through, different tests. So I'll stop here. Any questions or comments? Yes, Madam Mohan.
It's kind of interesting. I was just thinking about the same subject today. Is when we were chanting, what distracts us to stop chanting? Or when we're remembering Krishna, what takes us away from chanting and what brings us back? Like in the Bhagavad Gita says, always, wherever the mind wanders, bring it back under the control of the self. And I noticed that the process of knowledge, actually Kripa Sindhu, he mentioned one thing and it triggered that off in me, that knowledge is what brings one back to surrender. You know, after many births, one who's actually in knowledge, he surrenders. So I was noticing that process that you mentioned, you know, we should surrender, we should remember Krishna, and that's what knowledge is for. So they don't have certain aspects of knowledge that doesn't bring to surrender. In other words, their dietary issue is not considered important for them, and different aspects of not being able to stay connected with Krishna. And I noticed the secondary part of that is whatever that is hardens the heart. Whatever stops the that surrender, whatever attachment is there that comes up as soon as one chants or stops chanting, then you can see this element is, and then it just strings out into all the other aspects of material energy.
That's it's like whatever we hold on to, that's what we're attached to. That's what we're chained by and prevented from becoming Krishna conscious by, whatever we're holding on to.
And it changes your perception, relationship to persons, because it goes back into the, generally into the mode of passion, and identifying a person with the body. It leaves out Krishna's relationship with that person, with you. Everything, it's almost like a switch where it just flicks, and then it, all of a sudden a whole new platform of ignorance is established.
Rising to new heights of ignorance, right?
In just a second.
Right. It's like one of those things where you see the glass crack, you know, it starts off a little crack and then the whole thing, everything is covered by that.
Yeah. Comes as a package.
The vision becomes obscured. You can't see through the glass anymore for all the little prisms. Well, other questions or comments? So hopefully we will determine. I've been giving thought recently to this last offense of chanting, maintaining material attachments, even after so many instructions, you know, Bhagavatam class every day for 38 years, and like so many instructions. And what are we going to do? When are we actually going to be sannyas? Not necessarily put on the saffron clothes, but actually use everything in Krishna service. And what's not being used in Krishna service, get rid of it. So the question in our minds, what can we do to improve our surrender and pass the ultimate tests, the little tests and the big tests? But
well, one question on that is, what are you, the part that I usually forget is, what are you giving up when you're not surrendering? In other words, we understand we should surrender, and there's different reasons perhaps why we should surrender, but sometimes we forget what we're actually giving up by not surrendering. What is it that'll be there in that surrendered condition? Look at the possible.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, ultimately it's, what was it? I remember my wife telling me that she asked some girl, why are you working so hard? You know, you're just, you know, this is back in Dallas, and she was there, and some girl was working extremely hard, serving so many ways. And my wife asked her, why are you working so hard? And she said, I never do anything that's not in my own best self-interest. And so that's an issue. What is our best self-interest in any circumstance? What's the best thing for me to do? And once we arrive at the conclusion, what is our best self-interest from a Krishna conscious vantage, then we have that choice to make, and we have that opportunity to see clearly what's in our best interest. And ultimately, we're not asking anyone to do anything against themselves, you know, in Krishna consciousness. Today, it's Krishna consciousness movement is in some ways matured in America in our current temple, say like an Alachua temple. One is not forced, you know, to perform service, but the voluntary aspect is very, very pronounced, and devotees are working extremely hard in that capacity of volunteering and offering things to Krishna. That's very nice in that respect. Of course, the question is, how can we get back to that point when we were somewhat forced by managers to surrender? Yeah, it's interesting. I remember once in Vrindavan, I saw some devotees struggling, actually fighting and wrestling, you know, about whether or not the devotee would stay in India or go back to the States and do Sankirtan. And the Sankirtan manager was, they were actually wrestling right outside Prabhupada's room. And there's a little bit of a crowd there. I said, what are these guys doing? Well, they're fighting about whether they should stay. One guy wants to stay in India, the Sankirtan leader wants him to go back to the States. So I swear, they rolled around for a while struggling. And then the devotee who was on Sankirtan said, okay, I'll go back. But, you know, it's kind of funny. Some people will be aghast. Well, you actually physically force someone to, you know, of course he wasn't physically forced. He could run away, you know, do whatever he wanted. But he was, it was demonstrated that his going back to serve Krishna in this capacity was very, very important by his leader. And I don't think many of us are open to that anymore, you know, being pushed. But I know myself, I get great inspiration when a leader, when someone who's come to that position of leadership asks me to do something. I feel that this is important, that this is Krishna's will, Krishna's desire. When a leader asks you to give something up or infers that you're not giving enough, then that's kind of a little insulting. I won't say offensive, but it's a little insulting sometimes. But when one actually gives or gets the opportunity to be asked to do some service, it becomes very, very meaningful. Krishna is, it's actually, we may have a desire to do something, and then Krishna comes along and asks us to do that thing. It's very exciting. because it's a confirmation that our desire is in line with Krishna's desire. So thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.